It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are we doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
I am living the dream.
Which dream is that?
It's a very busy one.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
But tax season is behind us, so that's a nice little sigh of relief.
In the rear view mirror.
No, not really. I just extended mine. But
well, me too.
That's but the way it works. It's on hold for a little while. I can breathe a little bit. But yeah, every year I tell myself, you know what, I'm going to make sure I am on top of everything, do it monthly, have it all ready. And every year, the 2 weeks prior, I'm scrambling to pull everything together.
Same old stuff.
But I'm not going to do that this year. I'm going to make sure I'm organized monthly and have it ready to go.
I'll check back in a month or two. We'll see how that's going.
Give me till next April.
Next April. Okay. Well, yeah, I got down to the end, and there were like four or five components that were still needed. One was a cost basis. We may have talked about that on some of our shows before, but when you purchase a stock, you need to take personal responsibility, which I sort of did, maintain the stock cost basis so that when it sells, that you know what your cost was in order to determine what your long or short-term capital gains are. Because I happened to have a certain bank stock that over the years, over as many as 17 years, had been purchased a couple of times by a couple of different banks. And now down the road, they cashed in some of the stock and I'm going, but I'm not going to pay tax on the whole thing because there's a cost basis. And my accountant goes, okay, what is it? And I went, I'll get back to you. So we extended, and I'm currently researching my cost basis, which I have all of the prospectuses and the letters, proxy, and et cetera. So I can get back to it, but it would have been much simpler at the time.
So you held the stock in certificate form?
Actually I did, yes. I have had the stock in certificate form. And anyway.
I remember when
my
public accounting license, we want to share some tax horror stories. I had a client who had a box.
I've seen those boxes.
And when I said, well, we needed to calculate the cost basis, she handed me the box. It was musty. It was dusty. And I had to go back to the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
And I had another client that had some stock that he was trying to figure out if it had value. And I had to go back. It was an energy stock. It ended up finally being purchased by Enron. So I had some bad news for him.
Oops.
So.
Yeah, I had a client with one of those. It wasn't Enron. It was one of the other ones that had shot the wad and was worthless. You know, it used to be worth, $15,000, and now it's worth zippity-doo-dah. So they weren't happy, but that's just the way it goes. Individual stocks can have that that happen to them. So,
put all your eggs in one basket.
Always
folks.
Be careful. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And there are sites out there for those of you who don't know what the value of a stock on a particular day. And this relates to another topic I'll touch on briefly.
Here comes the tangent.
And that is tangentially speaking, that's my word, and that is to determine what the value of a stock was on any day in time. So there are sites out there. You can go in, plug in the stock, put in the date and time, and it will give you the value of that date. So it doesn't require a lot of research. It is doable. And for those of you who have had to deal with estates, we deal with those periodically with clients, is you determine a stepped-up cost basis on many of the assets, particularly stocks, as of the date of death. So if you need to determine the value of those particular stocks on that date, you have to go back to one of those services that will give you that, so you know what your cost basis is going forward for the point that you do finally sell it.
Okay. Well, today we have a busy schedule. Our topic for the month of April is investments. And today we're going to be talking about in the market segment, geopolitical risk.
There's no geopolitical risk, is there, John?
Oh, you know what? People think that everything's new, but I have some information that we'll go through. But, you know, a lot of this stuff has been going on for a long, long time. Fear in the market is certainly very prevalent. There's actually a fear index.
Is a fear index. I've seen that.
And it's pretty high. So I wanted to kind of get people focusing on the right things when it comes to their portfolios and geopolitical risk, and you know, kind of worry about the things you can control. And then our topic of the week, which is sponsored by the Chef Shop, we're going to talk about indexes, and what they are, the pros and cons of indexes, when they should be used, and how we should be using them with our portfolios to make sure that we're on the right track.
I believe that's a great topic, because oftentimes I hear people who I may be overhearing a conversation, not intentionally, but hearing a conversation from someone talking about, you know, the Dow or the S&P or the Russell or one of the other indices that are out there. And I'm quite certain after listening to what they have to say, they have no clue what they're talking about.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting. Everybody talks about it, but nobody really knows what it is. So this is probably timely. So let's take a moment real quick and just thank the Chef Shop, a topic near and dear to my heart, for sponsoring the show, underwriting us here at WSIE-FM 88.7 The Sound. And the Chef Shop, located in Edwardsville, is having a great year. I saw Vicky last week, I guess. Went in and bought a number of bags of popcorn for various and sundry items. And it is great popcorn, of course. So get in there. The Chef Shop's at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, 62025. They have lots of spring sales going on. The shop is just full of new and interesting items for the kitchen. It's where, you know, a good cup of coffee starts every day outright. And if you like coffee, if you go in there every day, they feature one of the many, many, many coffees that they have that you are more than welcome to sample. So you can try a lot of different coffees on a lot of different days. Just stop in, get a little cup, and if you like it, buy a couple pounds, because you're going to wish you had if you don't. But thanks to them, and they have their grand opening celebration, their 20-year, I guess, grand opening celebration coming up the end of May. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as we approach it, but there's going to be lots of activities. Vicky Primrose is coming back, I'm told. That's the guest of the event, and she started the Chef Shop some 20-odd years ago, and she'll be helping in celebrating reaching that milestone, which is significant in today's business environment. So congratulations to them, and thanks for the coffee, because it's always the best.
And you can also sample their fudge.
Well, yeah, there is that too.
Just saying. But I have a breaking news story.
Breaking news.
Did you know that the April 10th deadline to implement the fiduciary rule was not implemented?
I was aware of that.
Yes, folks, as we've been trying to keep you on top of the fiduciary rule, as that is near and dear to our hearts here with Larry and I, but it was delayed 60 days. So now June 9th, 2017 is the new implementation date. They are taking questions and comments from industry people and companies.
And anyone.
I know Vanguard has expressed their desire for it to be delayed again to try and get some of the compliance part of it ironed out. So we shall see. I have a feeling it will be delayed again. That's just my guess.
Well, we've talked about this many, many times in the last 6 months to a year that the show has been on, and our thought, my thought particularly, was that it would be delayed because there were just more questions than there were answers. It indeed was delayed for 60 days by the new regime that is in power today. And I agree, John. I think we'll see it postponed at least until the end of 2017, maybe on into 2018. Which really has thrown a monkey wrench into the activities of many of the biggest investment providers out there. Merrill Lynch is scrambling because they had spent millions and millions of dollars preparing for the rule. It did not take effect, so now it's kind of like, well, do we go ahead, which it appears they have in many cases, and implement the rule, even though it isn't really law. Ed Jones is another one that's out there, not to mention any names, but I know I've talked to a number of their reps that I know, and they are really not happy because they've spent a lot of time and money notifying all of their clients that they had to move their portfolios to approved fee-based type portfolios. And now since the rule was postponed, they really didn't have to move them. So now they have to go back and say, oh, by the way, you really didn't have to move it. And now that you did, you're really paying more money than you were before, but that's because the rule would have required it, but now it doesn't. So therefore, I would not want to be in that position.
I agree. And again, leave it to the government to create a mess by trying to fix a problem. So, geopolitical risk.
Let's talk about it.
Just looking at the word of itself, geo, you can take as far as the globe, the earth, and then political, anything to do with politics, countries, regimes, and so forth. But geopolitical risk when it comes to investing is an example would be the Middle East. That is a geopolitical risk. War has gone on there for ages.
Hundreds of years.
In simplistic terms, it's anything that any event that can happen in any country that can have an impact on investments, the market, your portfolio. I mean, we can go back through history, and I will do that since I have a nice handy-dandy chart here provided by American Funds, which goes back to 1934. And what I wanted to do, and we went through this before in Episode 9 when we talked about elections, markets, and investing, which is out on our podcast at www.thefinancialcafe.us.
Check it out, folks.
But we kind of touched on that. But I just want to go through some of the years and some of the events, and you're going to be sitting there drinking your cup of coffee thinking, that kind of sounds like where we are today. But in 1934, we were in the midst of a depression. 1936, it says we were in a recession. 1938, war clouds gather. 1939, war in Europe. In or around 1940, France falls. 1941, Pearl Harbor. We have a 1945 post-war recession. The Dow tops 200 in 1946.
That's Cold only War. 1-0 difference.
Cold
well,
War.
Two zeros, actually, but anyway.
Cold War begins, 1947. Soviets detonate the A-bomb, atomic bomb, in 1949. 1950-ish, the Korean War. I think I've heard that in the news.
I think it's coming back again, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. 1953, the Soviets detonate the H-bomb.
That was a good year.
Were you born that year?
Yeah.
I knew you were going to be able to give us a play-by-play on a lot of this.
Perspective, John, perspective.
I knew you were going to be able to color commentate. You lived through most of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
1954, the Dow tops 300. Larry remembers that.
Mm-hmm.
So recession. Castro seizes power in Cuba in 1959. The Soviets down a U-2 plane in 1960. The Berlin Wall is erected in 1961. Cuban Missile Crisis. That was a big one.
John F. Kennedy,
you probably remember that well, 1962.
Actually, I do.
Gulf of Tonkin, 1964. Vietnam War escalates. It's weird. The Korean War and the Vietnam War, in this chart they list as war, but weren't they police actions?
Depends on who you ask.
Okay. I don't remember, but I know you do. 1966 Vietnam War. North Korea captures USS Pueblo in 1968. U.S. invades Cambodia in 1970. Watergate 71. U.S. withdrawals from Vietnam 1975. New York City threatens bankruptcy 1976.
Imagine that.
Hey, how about an energy crisis?
Yeah?
Yeah, that was in here too. That was 1977, Three Mile Island. Reagan and the Pope are shot, 1980. Worst recession in 40 years, 1981. Soviets shoot down Korean airliner, 1983. Iran-Iraq War, Middle East again.
Back.
Escalates, 1984. U.S. bombs Libya, 1986. I do remember that because I remember France wouldn't let us fly over their airspace.
Mm-hmm.
After, you know, that they don't have to speak German. They wouldn't let us fly over their airspace, and our pilots had to go a roundabout way to do that mission. 1989, Michael Milken, problem with junk bonds. 1990, Iraq invades Kuwait. Recession in U.S., Soviet Union dissolves, 1991. Well, it's back again, folks. Dow tops 4,000, then 5,000, 1995.
Wow.
The technology bubble, 1996. Chaos in the Asian markets, that was Japan, 1997. The fear of Y2K, 1999. Internet bubble burst, 2000. Terrorist attacks in the U.S., 2001. Corporate accounting scandals. Remember Arthur Andersen?
I do.
Yeah, they don't exist anymore.
I know.
The U.S. invades Iraq, 2003. Oil prices soar, 2004. Dow Jones tops 12,000, 2006.
Recession. 11 short years ago.
The Great Recession begins 2007. U.S. unemployment tops 10%. Greek debt crisis, China growth slows. That gets us to 2015. So that kind of gives us an idea of what the stock market has been through. And over all that time, the stock market has averaged roughly around 8, 9, 10% average return. When it comes to geopolitical risks, don't let fear drive your emotional or investment decision. And again, as we have talked about on this show, any investment decision based on emotion, whether good or bad, will always, or at least almost always, be wrong. There's always a chance. One in a million, you still got a chance to get it right. But when it comes to your investment portfolio, how do you handle some of this stuff? And I read a nice article on Seeking Alpha, and it's called Weighing the Week Ahead, Coping with Geopolitical Risk. And I wanted to read a couple paragraphs here, as I thought this was about as good as you can get. And I didn't realize this in the 1980s. In the 1980s, the Cold War raged. Polls asked a variety of questions. One was whether people thought they would die in a nuclear exchange. And about 80% said yes. Later in the poll, people were asked whether they expected a nuclear exchange in their lifetime. 70% said yes. Putting these two results together show that most people did not expect to die of old age, an accident, or something else. More than half of the U.S. population seemed to expect death from a nuclear war. Had that question been asked directly, the answer would probably have been different, but you get the idea. Art Cashin, the clever, witty, and wise New York Stock Exchange veteran, has a story about his days as a trainee. You may infer his age since the incident occurred in the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. This was the closest the world has come to a nuclear war. And for those of you out there listening, if you remember and were alive during that, from what I understand, as I was not, but Larry was, that was a pretty scary time. I mean, it was pretty tense. Larry, any comments?
It was the principal example that I could refer to as playing chicken. And fortunately, our president at the time, John Kennedy, was better at it than the Cuban dictator. and they backed down. They pulled the missiles, and there was a sigh of relief because it was apparent. I was a young man at that point. It was apparent that that could have gone very differently, and we would have a much different world today. So those things, unfortunately, are going on every day as we speak. There's things in our part of the world, across the world, at any one point in time, which could change literally the course of history forever. And many of those are probably better not knowing about. But that was one that was based on the technology available at the time for radio and television and whatnot, was pretty widely distributed, and people were aware. And fortunately, it worked out. And now we're visiting Cuba.
So Art's instructor asked the trainee class how they should respond to the threat of war. The answers range from selling to going short. Wrong, the instructor explained, that if we got through this, the market would rally. If not, it's not going to matter.
I think a valid statement. I think so, that is a valid statement.
But if you think about this, if we end up in a nuclear war, I know the last thing I'm going to be thinking about is my investment portfolio.
Exactly.
So when it comes to what do I do with my investments with all the stuff going on, at the end of the day, I truly believe in humanity. Maybe I put too much trust in that, but I just do not see a situation where egos take us to the point where we self-destruct and destroy planet Earth. So if we have a war, we've been through wars before. If it's a conventional war, I agree that the wild card is North Korea. He seems to be a bit goofy, but he's living a pretty good life, and I can't imagine him wanting to give that up for the sake of a war that he knows he would ultimately lose. At least,
well, when you're in charge of everything, yeah, it's hard to give that up. And I think on a somewhat lighter note, what we're saying is that geopolitical effects are always going to be there. They always have been there. That will not change. But consistency that has been shown over the years, your asset allocation, your diversification in your portfolio, results in over 90% of the return that you have. So being consistent, you can't time the market. If that were effective, there were a lot of people that would be making a lot of money doing it. You can't, the old phrase is, it's not timing the market, it's time in the market. So get in, invest wisely, appropriately for your risk tolerance, your time frame, and horizon, and as your portfolio dictates in terms of meeting your objectives and goals.
Yeah, I mean, again, as we have talked about many times on the show and we'll continue to talk about, make sure you have the right asset allocation. How do you know if you have the right asset allocation? You have a financial plan done. You have everything laid out as far as what you would like to spend in retirement. You know, you're going to have to estimate your life expectancy. You lay everything out. That will determine what rate of return you need to earn on your investments in order to make those dreams, those spending goals come true. Folks, if the rate of return that's required is 15%, you need to go back and lower some expenses.
Because, time to reassess.
Because that's not reasonable. But if your required rate of return is 6, 7, 8%, that is reasonable. You put the plan in place. That will back into how your portfolio should be allocated. If you're already in retirement, you know that 8%, you maybe should drop down to around 6 because you're going to have more of a capital preservation or a bond type portfolio with some stock, not an all out aggressive type portfolio where you have, 80, 90% stock. But you put all that together, you implement the plan, and then at least once a year, come back and revisit it. And hopefully, if you're working with a financial advisor, they can on the front end say, let's say you lose 17% in year one and 10% in year two. Do you have enough cushion in your portfolio to get you through your whole horizon? If not, you need to make some adjustments. But you need to have all that information put together. This is not something that you write on the back of a napkin and move forward, because there are too many variables that need to be accounted for. And it's not that the financial plan is the crystal ball. The financial plan is merely a tool to give you some peace of mind, to put something down on paper, to have some sort of quantitative analysis done on it. And hopefully you've answered the questions honestly, especially when it comes to the risk tolerance part of it. Because if your portfolio is requiring you to have a 10% return, but emotionally you are the type of person that wants to bury the money in the backyard, we have a serious disconnect here. And that disconnect is only going to be measured in disappointment. So make sure that you have accounted for both variables, the emotional side as well as the quantitative. And then once a year, come back, at least once a year, come back and revisit it. Make sure everything's still on track. If that's the case, then you're good to go and you should have peace of mind. And the geopolitical aspect of all this, it has no bearing per se other than on your emotional fear. And if there is a nuclear war or something like that, it's not going to matter anyway. There's going to be a whole lot of other issues that we need to take care of.
But you know, whole new set of questions that come into play. But I think the bottom line is, as we've said over and over and over again, control the things that you can and prepare for the things that you cannot. There are certain things you can insure against. You know, you insure your car, your house, you know, your personal items against loss of theft or fire or casualty. In those situations, you can insure against disability during your working years. You can insure against loss of life if you should prematurely die before old age sets in to provide for those who survive. You can insure against long-term care and the needs that relate to that. You can also insure a stream of income through various types of investment vehicles that will live and pay out as long as you are alive and or your spouse. So there are ways of insuring against certain aspects of your planning, but it all goes back to the basics. You have to have a plan, you have to have specific time frames, specific objectives you have to implement, and you have to monitor the plan and finding a good financial advisor to do that and taking into account the what ifs down the road. You make a judgment decision. What things are you willing to self-insure, as it were, and what things are you needing to insure through a third party to give you peace of mind so that you can enjoy every day and not sit around worrying about what might happen, because what might happen may never happen. And while you're worrying about it, you're missing all the things that you could be enjoying today. So I rest my case.
Very good. I like that. So, you know, what are some of the things that and I think to some degree we are unfortunately becoming used to. I think the Middle East, I mean, that's always been there. That's always going to be an issue. China and Russia have never been friends of the United States. That's not going to change. The one thing that has increased, but I think we have, or at least coming to terms with, that it's going to be part of our everyday life, is terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not going to go away. We have the issues that are creating terrorism will never change. So that's just something that we are going to have to unfortunately accept.
Well, it is a rule that we do have to accept today that we never did prior to the World Trade Center bombing, because it was not on our soil much before that point. But we found that at that point that terrorism did come to our shores, basically, and we have to allow in the future for that. But reasonably speaking, let's go back to the statistics. I like statistics, as I know you do, John. Is the statistical, at least, analysis that I've seen of being involved in a terror-related incident are less than getting struck by lightning. So if you stay inside during all the storms so you don't get struck by lightning, then, you know, you may be concerned about terrorism. But otherwise, you know, you do what you need to do. You avoid, obviously, known areas of risk and doing the things that would expose you to risk. But otherwise, the odds are pretty small.
And the odds of being struck by lightning is less than the odds of being eaten by a shark.
Yeah. So. Or winning the lottery, for that matter.
Yeah. But the market has been resilient through all of this. But, you know, what are some of the good things going on in the stock market that we should be looking at? Foreclosures are down. Mortgage delinquencies are at a 10-year low. Inflation is relatively tame. Weekless jobless claims is still going in the right direction. The one bad that I see right now, retail spending is down slightly. I don't know if that's because of a Christmas hangover and
or tax time, or maybe
just maybe we are connecting with some people, Larry, and people are saving more.
That's it. I knew it was it.
All right. So we'll think positively on that.
Yep.
So, folks, let's, you know, again, make sure you have your plan updated. Make sure it meets your emotional side, your quantitative needs, and sit back, relax, and enjoy, as Larry said, enjoy life to its fullest.
You got to enjoy the ride, John, you know, because put money away. It's more important how much money you put away than necessarily how it's invested. I know when we start recently, as we talked about this morning, just starting a brand new retirement plan for a small daycare that has been in existence for a couple of years, and the folks who work there really had no clue. They'd never invested in a 401k plan, so it was refreshing to see that the company was going to do a match. I mean, that's free money. You better take advantage of it, because if not, you're silly. For the first time, many of them are investing in their future, and many of them were under 30 years old. So they have a long time frame, and whatever they put away today, we talked about the need to try and get up to 12 to 15% contribution rate, and that's not going to happen overnight. But if they do that consistently over their lifetime, then the rest will take its course and I think be in good shape when they do finally get to that retirement point.
Okay. Well, that wraps up the In the Market segment. You know what I just realized?
What?
I do not have a strange news story for the last segment for today's show. I was busy researching, but I do have a good joke. So I
We'll take the joke.
I'll use the joke when we get to that point.
We'll take the joke. All right.
So our topic of the week is indexes. Can you provide a definition of an index, Mr. Lexow?
I don't know about the technical definition, but the indexes that we use from a investment analysis standpoint certainly deal with specific groups of similar types of stocks or bonds, if you will, if it is a bond index, so that you can do comparisons. How's that?
Not bad. An index is a statistical measure of the changes in a portfolio of stocks representing a portion of the overall market.
That's what I said.
Right. Exactly. Yours was actually much more understanding.
Yeah, that's true.
Understandable. It would be too difficult to track every single security trading in the country. I mean, that's just impossible.
Not going to happen.
So what indexes do is they try to figure out which stocks and which sectors can be pulled together and mirror as closely to the market as possible. So to give you an idea, I didn't realize that the Dow Jones, which is probably the most common one, and I don't know why we use that one, and we'll get into the details of that here shortly, but the Dow Jones started back in May of 1896.
120 years ago.
I did not know that. And at the time, it only contained 12 of the largest public companies.
Today, were there more than that back then?
I guess. Today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, DJIA, contains 30, roughly 30, of the most influential companies in the U.S. So if you wanted to track international stocks, there's an index for that. If you wanted to track small cap stocks, the size of the company, there's an index for that. Money managers will always manage to an index because they want to be able to show that they are outperforming the index, and hopefully they're doing that analysis and comparison after taxes, after fees. If not, then it becomes silly not to just invest in the index. We did have a conversation about that earlier this month as active versus passive management. But when we look, let's go through some of the more common indexes that we see, and then we'll talk about some of the indexes that we don't have the news does not report on, but we should be at least be looking at, and then we can talk about bond indexing and some of the flaws with mm-hmm. that. But
one of the interesting things I find with the Dow, just looking at doing a little research on that, which is something that we do in our spare time, of course. John and I are diligent about staying
up
on these things.
We live a very exciting
yeah.
life.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes.
My head was bouncing off the table as I was falling asleep reading some of this stuff.
Really. But when you look at correlation meaning that the index mimics or is similar to
You're jumping ahead
the
on
return
me.
Of a specific market. And interestingly enough, the monthly return of the Dow and the S&P 500 has a 93% correlation, or in some cases 95%, to the market. So if you follow those indexes, oh, he's paging about six pages
you're,
up. I got him on that one. Got him
here,
on that one. They are very similar to what's going on out there. So at that point, I'll give John back his thunder. Go ahead, John.
I got to talk about correlation.
All right.
This is the world that I live in, but.
I'm sorry.
well, it's what I do. Like I said, I live on the edge. Correlation coefficient. This is important because if you are looking, say you have a money manager and they are managing large cap stocks for you, which index are you going to use to measure the performance of that manager that you're paying to manage that portfolio of stocks? And correlation coefficient is just it's a calculation. It's a formula that measures if the stock goes up or the portfolio goes up, if the market goes up 2% and your portfolio went up 2%, then you would say that you have perfect correlation between your portfolio and that index that you're measuring it against. If it went up 1%, you could argue that it's only a 50% correlation. But it's important because you want to make sure that this number, the correlation coefficient, is as close to 1 as possible. And certainly no less than 0.8, 0.75, because then that means that the index that you're using is not really correlated to the portfolio that you're investing in, and it's not a fair comparison. So if you're going to be measuring the performance of your money manager, make sure that you have a high correlation coefficient. I'm not going to get into the actual formula that breaks it down, but it's a measure of the performance of your portfolio against the performance of index, and you want to make sure that it's a fair comparison. You're not going to measure a bond index against a stock portfolio. That just is silly. But it is an important statistic. You need to understand how that should be used and make sure that your money manager or whoever is managing your portfolio provides that detail to you to say, look, the benchmark that we're using has a correlation to the portfolio of 0.85%. And that means you're good to go. So.
Well, the other thing that I find often in dealing with new clients is they will come in and they have their 401k and he has his 401k. So each of them is working and they may have an IRA and they have some other investments. And they, when asked, make the statement that they are well diversified in terms of their investments. But when you look at the actual investments underlying each of the types, the 401, the IRA, and other investments, we find that they have a very close correlation, meaning that everything they're invested in, although they may have different names of investment managers and even different companies of investments, that the correlation is above 80%, meaning that 8 out of 10 times situations in the market, everything they have is going to go the same direction at the same time. So although they feel they are diversified into different investments, the correlation coefficient says that otherwise that everything they have is investing in the same stocks.
So to give you an example of a perfect correlation, the Vanguard S&P 500 Index Fund, which is a very popular fund, mutual fund that investors use for investing, has a perfect correlation to the Vanguard S&P 500 Index. The only difference in the rate of return are the fees. So depending on which share class you have and how much what you're paying in fees for that mutual fund, that will be the only difference between should be the only difference between the return of the index and the return of your mutual fund investment. But looking at the Dow Jones, since that has been around the longest, is the most popular, what are some of the nuances of this index? Well, first of all, it only has roughly 30 stocks. It varies, but is 30 stocks a fair representation of the overall market? Well, according to our research, it represents about a quarter of the value of the entire stock market. One of the drawbacks, and I did not realize this, Larry, until I was reading, but the Dow Jones is what we call a price-weighted index. So the value of a stock that has a high dollar value, so if you have a stock that's worth 50 versus a stock that's worth 10, the $50 stock will have a larger representation in the overall index.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this important? Well, it's not a very accurate way of measuring. I mean, back in the day, they just took, when there was only 12 stocks, they used to do the calculation by hand. 12, the total value of all the companies divided by 12, there's the value of your index. But they have moved to a price-weighted calculation. What if a stock splits? So if you have a stock that's worth 100, and then they do a two-for-one split, now your stock is worth 50, but you have twice as many shares. The index doesn't account for that. It just looks at, oh, the stock's worth 50, so now it has a smaller weight in my index, but it's still the same company.
So commonly used, but not really commonly understood, and to some extent not really accurate in making a determination when it's only based on 25% of the market value.
Right. However, I mean, it, all in all, at the end of the day, it gives a pretty fair representation. I mean, it tracks pretty closely to the S&P 500 and so forth. They tend to move in tandem, and like you said, there's a 93% correlation between them. With acquisitions and mergers and companies going under, there has been a bit of volatility in the Dow as far as turnover of the companies that it includes. That's unusual because in the past there wasn't much change.
A lot more volatility today, obviously, in the Dow than there was 5, 10, 15 years ago. So be aware of what you're using and what you're comparing.
I would say the second most popular index that the news that you're going to hear about is the S&P 500, the Standard & Poor's 500.
No doubt.
And again, just because it has the 500 in there does not mean it actually has 500 stocks. At some point, there is 500, but that it can vary from, you know, 497 or whatever it may be. Now, the S&P 500 represents 80% of the total stock value of U.S. stock markets. So this is a measure typically of large cap U.S. companies. Now, the way that this one is calculated is what we call a market capitalization weighted benchmark. So a bigger company is going to have a bigger share of the index when they run their calculations. There is I think a better representation. However, I remember this specifically. I was at the trust company then, so this was back in, when did I come over? I'm trying to think. It was back in 2010-ish, maybe.
Yeah, probably.
In and around there. But the index was actually positive. So when you're using this type of calculation, there is a situation where if your 10 biggest companies are generating a positive return and the other 490 are negative, you may actually have an index that shows a gain when the broader market was really down. And that has happened before because the larger companies have a larger share of the index calculation and value of the have an impact on the value of the index.
And we deal with this, and that's happened recently as a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, certainly since the recovery of the market, because this is 2017 for those of you who are counting. But back in 2015 and 16, there was a period of time in the market, a matter of number of months, where it was quoted by our participants in plans, well, you know, my account, I got my report on my account for the second quarter, and it was only up, you know, 1%, and the S&P 500, as you hear on the news and in the paper and everything else, was up 6%. How come? You know, am I invested in the wrong stuff? And, you know, the funds I'm investing in must not be performing. They're not very good. But when you dug in, what was the reality, as still is the case to a certain extent today, many of these larger companies had a lot of cash. They were sitting on a lot of cash, and they initiated, which commonly happens when the board of directors votes, to do a stock buyback. So Apple is a prime example of one of them, which was doing a significant stock buyback. So they were buying shares, and as they buy shares back, the price of the shares tends to go up. And since Apple is one of the top companies, has a major impact on the market. Although, as John said, it might be 5 or 10 major companies were changing in price and going up significantly, it was only because of their internal stock buybacks. And the market overall was not responding positively, which is what was reflected in the portfolios of a lot of the participants. So you have to really understand what's going on, because when you look at the S&P 500, and there's another example here, you know, Microsoft had a share price near $60 and market capitalization near $460 billion. But United Health Group, who had a $150 share price and a market cap of $144 billion, obviously Microsoft being a much bigger company, but in the price-weighted system, United Health stock moves would have more than had twice the effect on the market than Microsoft's. So anyone company can have a major impact on the market, and it may not be a market-wide move. It may be a even within the 500 or 490 some odd stocks, it may be just a few of them that are going up that are reflected in the actual S&P 500 when the rest of the index is going down. So be wary.
Absolutely. I mean, we like to think of stock market and investing as a science. It's not a science. Nothing is perfect, and what we're trying to do is take a lot of imperfect data and produce reasonable information for our clients and our listeners. Probably the next most popular index is the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ, I did not realize, let me double check, I think that one started in 1971. The S&P 500 started in the late 50s, 1957, I believe. But the NASDAQ started in February 5th, 1971. The NASDAQ is tracked mainly because it is a very technology-heavy-weighted index. It's not like the S&P 500 tracks to large-cap stocks. The Dow Jones tracks to large-cap stocks. But the NASDAQ has a slight slant. Actually, I shouldn't say a slight slant. It has a pretty good slant towards a specific sector, which is technology.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also includes a lot of speculative startup smaller companies. But again, they tend to be technology laden as well. It's a nice index to track if you do have a lot of technology holdings and so forth. It is also a market capitalization weighted index, so it is calculated the same way the S&P 500 is. So some of the I'm going to talk about the Russell indices because they are gaining some more popularity. I personally like the Russell indices, but if you wanted to start from the broad market, the Russell 3000 would be their all-encompassing index, which accounts for. We only have 10 minutes left. Oh my gosh, I have so much material.
What the clock says.
I have so much material. I'm so excited to go through
all this stuff. Let's ramp it up here, Jen.
All right, I got to speed it up. Okay, so the Russell 3000. I'm going to start talking like one of those disclaimer people. But the Russell 3000 covers the broader market. From that, if you pull out the top or the largest 1,000 companies, you get the Russell 1000 index, which is your large cap index. If you pull out the other 2,000 stocks from the Russell 3000, you're going to get your small cap index, which is the Russell 2000. And then the Russell mid cap, if you pull out the smaller 800 companies from the Russell 1000, that gives you your Russell mid cap index. I like those because they tend to be broader based. Again, they're all market weight capitalizations, but because there's a lot more stocks in there, any one stock has a smaller impact on the index. And I just prefer the Russell indices. That's just a personal
spread the risk.
If you wanted to capture truly the entire stock market, you could use the Wilshire 5000, but that was started in 1974, and that encompasses just about everything that you could imagine.
And again, probably not representative of how you're invested.
Right.
Because it's good to know, depending on, particularly in a 401k plan or profit-sharing plan, simple IRA, is your trustee generally is the one picking the funds into which your money will be invested. So looking at the fund selection that you have, obviously one of the things that we do in analyzing portfolios of investments, are they the best funds given the category and the most cost-effective funds that are available, because that's what the Department of Labor and the IRS is looking at. Do you have a best-of-the-best fund package for your company for the participants to select from based on the demographic? Because the cost will vary. When you have a startup plan, as we talked about earlier, the cost is going to be higher because there is a cost of getting the plan up and running, setting it up on the record-keeping system, providing the 1-800 number, the voice-actuated response system, sending out statements. So there is a fixed cost that goes into setting up a plan. That's why it is, as a plan grows in assets, the cost per dollar goes down as a percentage. So knowing what that is, knowing the funds that you have to choose from, and what indices do your funds that you've elected generally follow? Because if you're invested in a lot of small cap funds and you're following one of the large cap indexes, it has very little correlation and you don't know what you're comparing it to. So you have to know what you're looking at.
Another index, especially if you have international stocks in your portfolio that you can use and it's not reported on, is the MSCI, which stands for the Morgan Stanley Capital International, and then EAFE, E-A-F-E index, and that stands for Europe, Australia, and Southeast Asia, Far East. So that would be tracking a portfolio where you're invested in international stocks. So that kind of covers the broader-based indices, what's good about them, what's bad about them, how you can be using them. If you have a diversified portfolio, you can, and your advisor should be able to create a diversified portfolio of correlated indices to give you an idea how your portfolio is measuring up against a portfolio of indexes. And if your active managed portfolio is not outperforming a portfolio of indices on a relatively consistent basis, after fees and after taxes, you may want to consider using index fund. I do have one quick note here. There was a piece I read, Five Facts You Didn't Know About the S&P 500, and I thought this one comment was appropriate. All it says is, most funds lose to it.
That is true.
If you're wondering how our opinion on active management versus indexing, you can listen to when we put the April shows on podcast. Real quick, before we get to my joke and Larry's strange news story, when you're measuring a bond index, when you have a bond portfolio, you're trying to measure what to measure it against, it is a very difficult thing to do. It's very difficult because the bond index is going to have thousands and thousands of bonds in the index. And unfortunately, a bond portfolio, a bond manager can't buy that amount. So it's tough to track against. And also over time, bond indexes tend to change. Just for example, this is good information to have. If your bond portfolio or bond mutual fund is being measured against which is now the Barclays U.S. Aggregate Index, which is a very common index for bond portfolios that used to be the Lehman Brothers, if we remember that company. In 2007, that portfolio only had 19% treasuries. Today, it has over 40% in treasuries. So Is that a fair benchmark to your corporate bond portfolio? Maybe not.
Not really. And I guess the bottom line is know what you're talking about. Find a good advisor who understands what you're comparing against which index, if you are interested at all in doing that. And just know what you're investing in, because there are things you can control. There are things you have no control over. So control the things you can and don't worry about the rest.
And if you have questions and you're just not sure, feel free, shoot Larry an email at llexo@nickelfinancial.com or myself, jgraney@nickelfinancial.com, or go out to our website, www.thefinancialcafe.us. Our contact information is out there. Shoot us the question, and we will gladly return an answer to you.
Yeah, leave us a number. I did get an email from a listener last week, and they want to know when they could access last week's show on a podcast. I will be uploading those probably today or tomorrow. So check back this weekend or next week at www.thefinancialcafe.us, and you'll find the most recent shows out there on specific topics that you can go ahead and download and listen to.
Okay. Strange news stories indeed, and a joke.
I love criminals or the things they do. I should be more specific. There was an El Paso, Texas man who broke into a church. That's his first mistake. And absconded, good word, with a safe. Of course, safes are not light. So he only got a few yards. He dropped it in his on his neighbor's lawn, and not attempting to carry it any further, he got a crowbar and tried to break into it. And that's when his neighbor came out. Asked him what he was doing. Of course, his neighbor was a police officer.
Oh, my gosh.
So, oops. And this was just, you know, karma is something that works. You know, is there no honor among thieves? While two suspects were being questioned in Ogden, Utah, by police about shoplifting from a store, someone broke into their car and stole their stereo. So, what goes around comes around.
Oh, wow. So anyway, a gentleman is driving down a highway and he's speeding. The police officer pulls him over, and the police officer is very angry because it's near the end of the day. He really doesn't feel like doing the paperwork, filling out the ticket, and so forth. As he gets up to the car, he says, "Look, if you can tell me why you were speeding and it's a good reason, I'll let you go." And gentleman thinks for a second. He looks up at the police officer. He said, "Well, about 15 years or so ago, my wife left me for a police officer. I thought you were him and you were bringing her back to me."
Yeah.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, we're going to move on from there.
And ladies, you can reverse that around. It's not you can reverse that and say you thought you were bringing the husband back to me if you want.
Either way, it works both ways,
yeah. But it's a funny joke. Just ask me, I'll tell you.
Yeah, thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe. John Graney here, myself, Larry Lexo, and our underwriting sponsor for going on almost a year now, The Chef Shop, located in Edwardsville. Lots of fun stuff in there, the fudge, the popcorn, and, of course, the coffee, which we continue to enjoy on every show. A good cup of coffee starts every day outright. I have one every morning at least, and then throughout the day. So enjoy it. Stop by, say hi to Nancy and Scott, of course, as I mentioned many times, is a grad of the Mass Communications Department here at SIU, WSIE-FM, The Sound. So thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Hope the show wasn't too much of a downer today, but we'll try and get on to some better topics.
Just relax, kick back, have fun.
Topics going forward, so live life to the fullest and enjoy. Say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at llexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.